Stephen, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for joining me. Now, firstly, what have been the major factors to the growing obesity trend in Australia?
Yeah, it's a difficult problem because you can't put your finger on one particular driver. There's been a lot of different changes that have happened over time that put together have led to this increase in weight across the community. So we have access to unhealthier food more easily. It's more difficult to be physically active. It's more difficult for us to make healthy choices in an easy way. So the policies we're proposing and asking the government to consider and to pick up are really around making it easier for the population to make healthy choices to help reverse this very alarming situation.
Well, I think that's a very positive thing because a lot that we've been seeing, in the push for Healthy Australia has been about sort of penalising unhealthy decisions. But it'd be wonderful to see incentivisation of more positive decisions about the way that you eat and your health. Now, the executive manager of the Obesity Policy Coalition stated that obesity is costing the economy over $6.8 billion annually. How is the economic impact of obesity measured exactly?
Well, and it's very important to stress that that number is, something called direct costs, which relates to the cost of the health system in particular. So actually it multiplies many times out when you consider people losing time from being unwell and reduced time available to live a healthy life. So the way that's measured is you look at the cost associated with people who are in that overweight or obese category and compare it to what would happen if everybody was a healthy weight. Essentially, one of the things you're saying is if we could get these policies in place and they're effective enough to create people at a healthy weight level, we could save that amount of money from creating those changes.
And with that said, what are some of the measures that have been proposed in the Tipping the Scales report?
Yeah, and you mentioned the importance of that incentivizing people in a positive setting, and I think that's really important to understand that these aren't individual or punitive measures. We really are trying to improve the environment, particularly for our kids, but for the general population. So there's 8 recommendations there around restrictions on TV, junk food ads to kids, the reformulation of foods so that they're healthier, making health star ratings on foods mandatory, so at the minute they're voluntary, developing a national transport strategy for active transport so people are active as a part of their daily life, increasing public education, getting one of the ones we've seen work overseas is a tax or a health levy on sugary drinks, creating a national response to this problem, and then making sure that we've got decent measures in terms of diet, physical activity, and weight guidelines so that we know when we start turning this around why and how we're doing it, how we can share that and accelerate the good work.
Mm. It's one of the things you mentioned is the tax on sugary drinks. Now, I find it very interesting. There's been pretty widespread opposition to this. When we do see similar taxes on other free choice, things like cigarettes and alcohol, which also do have quite a big cost to the economy in terms of health services. Why do you think there's been such a struggle to try and introduce a tax on, high sugar things when we have had taxes for a long time on other, unhealthy decisions?
Well, naturally, these things have a lot of different political priorities, and there's a lot of things going on, and sugar tends to be a hot button issue. But I think a different way of framing that is, in 1950, 85% of the population smoked and life expectancy was about 65. We've got the smoking prevalence down to somewhere between 12 and 15% over the last 80 years, and life expectancy has gone up to somewhere in the region of 80 to 82 years. We're a much healthier population. It took a long time to turn that around. When we look at weight status, we're looking at the first generation where life expectancy is going down. So our kids are likely to live less longer than we will because of weight status. So the question is not really whether or not we should make these policy changes. It's how long it takes us to put them in. And the resistance is natural. There's resistance to change in any realm, but the evidence is becoming overwhelming. Something has to be done, and a tax on sugar makes a lot of good sense.
If you've just tuned into The Daily this morning, we're speaking with Dr. Stephen Allender, the director of the Global Obesity Centre at Deakin University, about a new initiative to reduce Australia's growing obesity levels. Now, Stephen, there's a recommended... Another one of the measures I want to talk about that was suggested was a crackdown on junk food advertising. Now, how much of the effect, how much of an effect does advertising of junk food and fast food have on people's choices?
It's difficult to pass that out. And of course, if you're a junk food marketing company, you're not going to share with the public health community how effective your advertising is. But it's fairly safe to say that people wouldn't spend the money they spend on advertising if they felt it didn't work. We did a piece of work where we looked at the junk food advertising spend in the UK, and we compared it, and that was for one junk food company, compared to how much the government was spending advertising a healthy diet. And we asked the question, when would the government's money run out to advertise a healthy diet if they spent at the same rate as one burger company? And I won't make you guess, but you can probably understand that if the government had spent at the same rate, then their budget for healthy advertising would run out in the first week of January. So you're not comparing things on the same scale, and it's not possible for populations, communities, to have a fair fight when the scale of advertising against them is so vast. And not only that, we're creating mindsets and a false understanding in our kids of just what a healthy diet is, and that manifests itself all the way through their life and has health impacts right the way through that are costing those kids, but also costing the society.
Mm. Well, I think it's interesting to backtrack a little bit. You spoke about how we progressed in terms of life in expectancy and general health as we become more aware of the dangers of smoking and better at combating, you know, smoking rates in Australia. I think it's interesting that as we've become more aware of the dangers of unhealthy eating, our obesity has gone up and we've become unhealthier eaters. Now, why do you think that it is, despite better awareness, is it due to things like advertising, that despite better awareness, we're still getting unhealthier and unhealthier?
Yeah, and it's one of the big difficulties, and one of the pieces of work our research group is doing is to try and unpick the complexity of it. So if you look at smoking, it's actually pretty easy. You smoke or you don't, and then the only nuance is how many cigarettes or how much tobacco you smoke. But there are very few benefits of smoking, if any. We all have to eat, and we all do eat, and we're not. I would argue, and I think it's probably fair, we're not making a conscious decision about health each time we choose what we eat. And nor should we really have to, but we do need the support to make a healthier food choice easier. So if you ask any parent of any kid, would you like your kids to be healthier because it helps their growth, their development, their education, their career attainment? Well, the answer, of course, is yes. If you put that same parent in the supermarket aisle and say, pick the three most healthiest cereals, they wouldn't have a hope. They would be looking at things that say they're low in fat, which don't say they're really high in sugar, and then they'd be looking at things that say they're low in sugar but are actually high in fat, and then they'd be looking at things that are endorsed by athletes that are actually really terrible for you. And it's just not a fair playing field. It's not a problem of individual choice. It's literally that it is not easy or possible to make healthy choices, and so it's a much more complex picture. So providing the means to make a healthy choice, which is part of what the Food Star rating system is about, but also creating an environment where eating food that is bad for you is not rock and roll and jazz. You know, like if you think the junk food companies sell sunshine and happiness and love, and that's not what you're eating when you eat junk food.
Mm. Well, it is what you're saying about the health star ratings is definitely going to be a positive step if they can become mandatory, because it seems like for a little while there it's getting to the point where you need to be a qualified nutritionalist to try and decipher what's right from all the information on the side of packets. Stephen, thanks so much for joining us this morning to talk about this new Tipping the Scales initiative and a little bit about more widespread health in Australia. I appreciate your time.
Great pleasure.